Okay, so Tim Versalotti is the director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and the guy who I always ask to explain things to me. So explain this to me, Tim Versalotti. How come the GOP, especially the legislators, continue to pay fealty to Trump?
This is a fascinating story to watch unfold. Who would have thought the daughter of Vice President Cheney would be hounded out of the House leadership? Liz Cheney raising questions about the party's loyalty to Trump, calling former President Trump's claims about the election outright lies. And now she is no longer in the leadership, but replaced by Elise Stefanik. I think it comes down to numbers and primaries. What we have seen with polling among Republicans since President Trump left office is a bit of softening in his support nationally, but it may not translate when it comes to voters who vote in Republican primaries. So here's a great example. An NBC News poll of the nation in late April asked Republican and Republican-leaning voters, do you identify more as a supporter of former President Trump, or more as a supporter of the Republican Party? This is a question that they've asked repeatedly since January of 2019. Throughout their polling, the majority of Republican and Republican-leaning voters have said they identify primarily as a supporter of Donald Trump versus the Republican Party. That number has flipped in the latest polling when NBC asked this in their April survey. What they found for the first time was 50% of Republican and Republican-leaning voters said they identify primarily as supporters of the Republican Party. 44% said they identify as supporters of Donald Trump. So gradually, former President Trump's support in the Republican Party is beginning to soften up a bit. But the folks who turn out in Republican primaries tend to be very ardent supporters, and the members of the House in the Republican caucus are aware of that and don't want to antagonize Trump supporters in their home districts. They don't want to get primaried because it wouldn't take much in some of the districts to turn them out, which is why you see very few Republicans leaving the caucus to support things like the establishment of a January 6th commission, a bipartisan commission to investigate the insurrection. You saw maybe about three dozen Republicans from the 200 plus Republicans in the caucus deviate from the party line and vote for it. The vast majority do not want to bring on a primary opponent, and so they stuck with the party's opposition to that commission.
Well, you know, I'm sorry for being so strong in my thoughts on this, but, you know, it seems to me that there is an outstanding lack of what I could call pro-American democracy among these Republican legislators who are willing, in order to, as you suggest, keep their seats, sell out the whole concept of American democracy.
Well, critics of Republican members of the House argue that point, that in particular, when it comes to the investigation of the events around January 6th, why would you not want to get to the bottom of that? Why would you not want to learn more about the security failures and how the rioters breached the security perimeter and got into the Capitol? Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, argues that the commission ought to be looking at political violence more broadly defined, that he argued that it also should be taking into account incidents of violence in summer of 2020 demonstrations after the death of George Floyd, after the murder of George Floyd. Democrats say, well, these are two things. One, those were very sporadic, very limited occurrences, but two, it's completely separate from the issue of January 6th. And this would be distracting from getting at some of the core questions of how the insurrection occurred. So we've got this division here. And as long as members of the Republican members of the House are hearing from their constituents and believe that this is what a majority of their base want, they're going to keep doing it. I don't think we'll see much movement for Republicans unless there are some surprises in the midterm elections in November 2022. The party that holds the White House typically loses seats. Right. If the Republicans were to make narrower gains or things were to stay at the status quo, there would be a lot of questions about the strategy that they're pursuing right now. So we've got to wait and see. The Democrats have a very narrow hold on the House. They've got an 8-seat majority right now. There are 5 seats that are open for various reasons. It's going to be very hard for the Democrats to hold the House, very hard for Democrats to hold the Senate. Even though there are 34 seats up in the Senate, Republicans defending 20, Democrats defending 14. CNN ranks the top 10 seats liable to flip as even. 5 Republican seats, 5 Democratic seats. It's going to be a close, close contest for the Senate.
Now, you mentioned Cheney and Stefanik. Stefanik, of course, is one of our representatives here in New York State for the upstate vote. What can you tell me about her?
You know, she's an interesting political figure. When she first ran for the House, she was not identified with the issues and the fervor that one would associate with supporters of Donald Trump. But she very rapidly saw a political opening in the first Trump impeachment hearings at the end of 2019. She was an ardent defender of President Trump. This was a national podium for her. It raised her visibility, particularly in the Republican, the conservative communications infrastructure, Fox News, and related blogs and websites. And it overnight made her a national political figure. She continued to be a strong supporter of President Trump, his defender during the second impeachment as well. And she has come a long way from her political origins in terms of what she stands for as a Republican. She's fully embraced Trumpism. It's taken her to the third ranking position in the Republican caucus in the House. It's a fascinating case study in someone moving very, very rapidly from the back benches to the leadership.
Okay, so listen, I got a question. We don't have that much more time, but I have two very big favorites of mine in the House of Representatives, the Representatives Neal and McGovern, Jim McGovern and Richie Neal. But they both face redistricting because of the fact that the population has moved somewhat in Massachusetts. So could their first and second House districts be affected?
They sure could. This is one of these good news, bad news things. Massachusetts population grew by about 7%. Over time, 2010 to 2020, we kept pace with the rest of the country, so we're not losing any of our 9 House seats. However, the greatest growth occurred in eastern Massachusetts, and therefore the 2 western Massachusetts districts need more people. And how do you get them? You could push the lines east, and this has ramifications for both of them. The Joint Senate-House Redistricting Committee held a hearing recently for the 2nd District. Jim McGovern testified, said it's very important to him to keep the Pioneer Valley in his district. It is and it's important for Western Massachusetts to have 2 seats in the House. Whether those arguments will carry the day is hard to say. Well, it's possible his boundaries could move east. Northampton could shift back to the 1st District, possibly even Amherst. That would make a much more liberal 1st District. It would open up Richie Neal possibly to a more potent challenge from the left in a primary. So there, even though we're keeping our nine seats, there's a lot of intrigue about redrawing the boundaries, especially here in Western Massachusetts.
Well, we always love to talk to our friend, our pal, and a man we very much respect, Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and a guy, when I just don't understand something, I can go to and say, hey, Tim, what's this all about? Thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Alan.